Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome back to Get It Off Your Breasts, the podcast that digs into the issues that really get under your skin.
With no filters.
I'm Emma Gannon.
And I'm Leanna Bird. And this week we're delighted to be joined by broadcaster and all-round badass Angela Scanlon, who you'll no doubt know from The One Show and Robot Wars. And we're going to tuck into some juicy topics today, like Americanisms, burnout, and how to include men more in the feminist conversation.
Hi Angela, we're in your house, and what do you want to get off your breasts?
I want to get off my my bra, first of all, but I feel like it might be a bit early.
Feel free, let loose.
Americanisms. I've noticed, I mean, maybe it's been happening for a while, but I've noticed in my socials, in advertising, whether that's online or elsewhere, this kind of influx of Americanisms in our language. It came to me the other day because somebody said, we've just launched our, I'm putting on an American accent, it was a very British brand introducing fall.
The fall collection.
Yeah. And I just thought, no, what? It's autumn. I mean, there's always going to be a little argument about whether it starts in September or October, and I'm okay with that. I don't really care. But just call it autumn. And it's not just that. I think, you know, there's obviously millions of other examples of that.
Did you say that you were also at a social occasion where people were actually talking in Americanisms around you as well? So
yeah.
What sort of things? Like, I think I've heard it as well, but any examples?
It's kind of like not only the words used, but this kind of like slightly generic American accent and lilting, and I'm like, where are you from? Oh, you a Hull? Or Galway? I'm like, I can't quite figure it out. And so I wonder whether it's because we're exposed to, you know, I don't know.
Do you think films and TV, we've all got Netflix now, we watch like so many American box sets.
Yeah.
And also podcasts in America. Like, you know, the Serial voice.
Yes.
Of like, this is Serial. And it's kind of, I don't know if that is ingrained, but I used to get told off by my mum because me and my sister were obsessed with Saved by the Bell.
Oh, hello.
Like, I literally wanted to marry Zach Morris.
Yeah, I wanted to be Kelly.
I mean, you know, I've got the hair of Zach. But it was really funny because she would be like, Emma, you can't call it, like, I'd be like, hey mum, I'm gonna take out the trash, and she'd be like,
and go
oh
on
my
vacation
God. Yeah, like the garbage, like, why?
No, it really annoys me. And I think it's natural because, like you say, we're watching films, we're on Netflix, we're seeing American people all the time. But I think we always kind of have, I think it's why we can do like an American accent a bit easier than Americans attempting to do
an
Irish,
pretty good. I'm quite impressed.
Or a British accent, because they've never heard it.
Isn't it funny as well, like British accents in like Friends, there's a fake, is it, oh, who is,
well,
it,
it's
Ross's
Queen's
girlfriend
English, Rachel,
Emily.
Or Emily.
Yes, and it's never right.
No, because it's kind of,
but she is
Queen.
British.
She
that
is.
Was weird. That it was like
she was
over,
in Cold Feet, wasn't she?
Helen Baxendale, is it?
So do you think they said, can you be a little bit more British?
I think she like overpronounced her Britishness.
It was like Queen's English, please.
I tell you what I noticed though, which kind of bugs me sometimes, is that British bands, when they sing, sometimes they sing in American accents. Do you know what I mean?
Like
and you'll notice sometimes you'll hear a British band singing in with a British accent and pronouncing, you know, the A's as ah, and it kind of sounds almost weird. And I think like it was only recently, like I don't know, maybe the last 10-20 years that bands even started doing it. But like if you listen back to music from the 60s and stuff, like all the British bands would basically sing in American accents,
a softened kind of. You're right, actually. Is the band Twin Atlantic?
Yeah.
I think they're Scottish. I'm going to get it wrong, but I think they're Scottish. Oh my God, when I hear them, they sound so Scottish. And when they're singing, you're just, it's so lovely now when you hear that real authentic accent.
So do you think though that that is like slightly that the, one of the reasons it's bugging you and bugs us as a nation is because Brits are a little bit snobbish about our language?
I'm not English, so that's not it.
British, no, of course.
But that's a whole other conversation. I think, I don't know, I guess it's the same thing that kind of bugs me about Starbucks. It's like, let's just have some sort of, I suppose, let's protect, not protect, but celebrate the uniqueness of different nations and of different accents and of different cultures, rather than all trying to bland everything out and just everything feeling the same.
Homogenised, yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you what I find slightly annoying as well, like it's kind of similar, it's like certain American commercial things seeping in, like the fact that we now, like Black Friday for example, which is basically just an excuse for shops to push more marketing on us and basically make us all spend our money more. And it's become like a thing now, like it's just accepted, and I feel like we're gonna have Thanksgiving next and it's like another excuse for people to push like gift, like greetings cards on us.
But already Thanksgiving is an Instagram thing over here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I see loads of people who are going having... I mean, I may or may not have done it last year. Do you see a Thanksgiving thing? Yeah. Oh, so it's like, you know, any excuse. So maybe I'm an absolute hypocrite, am I?
Do you think, like, the internet and social media as a whole, though, is making the world seem a lot smaller? So, yeah. You know, I follow X many people, but I'm sure half of them might live in America.
The lines are blurring.
But I find a lot... I know some people who pronounce, like, Twitter. And it's like, I wonder where that's coming from, because they haven't spent any time there.
Yeah.
It's got to be TV and music, I think. It has to be.
Or is it that they, you know... are just trying to slightly distance themselves from not where they are, but kind of neutralize themselves.
Maybe. I definitely think that I try and like not sound as posh as I am sometimes.
Yeah.
Because I'm like a bit embarrassed to sound posh. Like I don't think I notably do it, but I'll like, you know, water and stuff like that. Like I'll say water and my mum will be like, why are you speaking like that?
Even though my mum's
not even English, but she's like got a really heavy accent but still notices these things.
Do you think it's really interesting, because I think like some of this sounds a little bit sometimes like it could be like cultural appropriation-ish if you're borrowing language, if you're borrowing slang, if you're borrowing someone else's culture. It's like your accent is a big part of your personality and who you are and like your roots. Do you find that that plays into it? Like everyone should just be themselves?
Big time. And I think that's probably what it is. So, you know, whether it's the language that you use or the way that you look, it's kind of like holding on to yourself rather than trying to blend in with everybody else. But I think that's because I'm a redhead and I've always like slightly felt, you know, like I really have to protect that.
Do you find, as an Irish woman as well, do you find that that similar things happen where like in Ireland like little Britishisms will like come in, or Englishisms rather, will sort of seep in and it's slightly annoying, or even vice versa, that like when you're over here people will like steal an Irish expression and you're a bit like, hold a minute, that's us, back off guys.
Well, when people say and I don't know whether they use it in conversations with other British people, but people will say, oh, that was grand. And I'll say, that's not really the way Irish people use the word grand, right? So, you know, for people, and it's in a well-meaning way. It's not like it's supposed to be kind of patronising or anything, but they'll say, oh, how, you know, I asked somebody, how was your weekend? Oh, it was a grand weekend. And I thought, okay, I don't think, you know, you would deliver it in a different way, because grand in Ireland means okay, kind of.
You see, if someone said that to me, I'd think that they went to like a ballroom and they were like a very grand weekend. Yeah.
Or like a grand, Ash was grand, kind of in a slightly Tom Cruise Far and Away lilt. And whereas grand to an Irish person is...
People say the crack now as well. Like I had good crack.
The crack.
Does that wind you up a bit as well?
Well, because again, I don't know that... No, crack I'm okay with. Once they understand it's not a class A
drug. We're
going
to clip that out and just have crack I'm okay with and just release that. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. That's perfect. That, I think that's kind of sweet, I suppose. I don't mind that too much. But yeah, I guess... I recently was on a job where the director was telling, I was saying a word, I can't even remember what the word was, but it was a T. And so Irish people tend to go in quite hard on the old T's, right? So whether it's like, you know, a tree, right? That sounds normal, but three, the number, also we would say tree. Because, you know, we're busy. Like, just get to it. And so she started repeating over and over again. She was actually Australian. She started repeating over and again, 33, 33. And she was literally, like, doing a leprechaun dance in the hall. She's like, 33, 33. And I said, yeah, I think we get the point, you know. Mm-hmm. And also, I just thought, dude, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, in a way, possibly a compliment. That, you know, people feel like there's a closeness, a familiarity with Irish people, that they're never insulting you, but actually there's kind of, yeah, sometimes
I've had that on a shoot in America once. The photographer was like, hey, where are you from? I can't do the accent. And then he kept going, Shoreditch, Shoreditch, Hackney, Hackney, Shoreditch, like that, literally whilst taking pictures of me. He was like, oi, over here, Shoreditch. And I was like, I really hate this man. It was funny, but like it's mocking me.
but you know what? I think it's really interesting what you were just saying when you said, is it a form of cultural appropriation? Because like it's like, how important is language to us then as an identity? Like, does that become part of your culture? Like, as someone who's Irish, like, is, you know, those sort of terms of phrase and language that's uniquely Irish, does that become like something that you see as part of your identity? And when
people borrow them, and then you feel like you're not entitled.
Are you kind of like seeping into that whole like cultural appropriation thing,
or are we just taking it too seriously? I don't know.
I think it's very interesting, because I think especially somewhere like Twitter, like
Twitter,
there's different groups of people on Twitter, and they use it in different ways, and they use it to express their identity. So I think when you look at how other people are using language to talk about their own culture, maybe it's like the LGBTQ culture, maybe they've got some slang, can you really just pick and choose that and use it? I don't think you can.
Okay, so my only point of reference, because I think especially with something like cultural appropriation, we can all have our opinions, but unless you're of that culture, you can't maybe really understand, and so you have to respect people of that culture's opinions on it. I'm Jewish, I have like a big fat Jewish family, and I love it when I hear like really like Yiddish words or like really Jewish words like being used in other people's culture, because I see it as like a warm, like they're embracing it. And okay. I, you know, if someone calls me like a nudnik or a schmuck, I mean, hopefully they wouldn't call me that because they're negative words, but if someone says like, oh, it's being such a nudnik or a schmuck or something like that, I find I like that, because I'm like, oh, it's like, I don't know, they're accepting that. Or even if I go to a wedding and people are doing like Jewish dancing, if they're not Jewish, I actually quite enjoy that. I don't know, maybe I'm coming from a slightly different point of view, and maybe it's, you know, different.
And so what do you enjoy about it?
I don't know, I just think like because I, you know, I'm quite like a global person, and I feel like that's people accepting my culture.
So it's an embracing of that culture.
I see that, like, that they are warmly embracing Jewish culture. Like, I'm not religious in any way, so for me Judaism is like, being Jewish is totally a cultural thing.
Yeah.
And I love, if I can teach someone to like make a proper Jewish soup, chicken soup, like with the bones boiled to death so it makes me feel amazing, like I really like that. And I see like I feel it's like people are interested in my culture, they're interested in where my family's from. And I also just think like the whole like global community is kind of blending, and you know, that we all kind of learn and are enjoying each other's cultures. I see that as a positive thing.
Yeah. So fall doesn't bother you?
I think the fall thing is probably because the fashion world is dominated by America. I mean, I don't know.
I don't think that's true.
Do you not think, no?
No.
Okay, so if I heard someone, for example, saying diaper, I'd be a bit like, what are you talking about? Like, you're British, that's weird.
It's a nappy, babe.
Yeah. I definitely think that's weird, yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel you.
It is weird. It's weird.
On that note, Emma, would you like to move on to what you'd like to get off your breasts?
Yes, so I would like to get off my breasts the sort of idea that feminism is just for women, which obviously is really obvious that it's not. But in a lot of things recently, like campaigns, films, podcasts even, and I'm guilty of this, are kind of excluding a lot of men. And this has come from actually friends of mine and also my boyfriend who were just like, how come? Like, really innocently asking, how come, like, lots of conversations around feminism are just including women? Like, mm-hmm. how come you only interview women? Because I do. I only interview women on my podcast apart from...
Matt Haig.
Will Young. Oh, and Matt Haig. So only a very handful of men, which I started to do very consciously, because actually it's very true. If you're making like a talking heads documentary about feminism, it feels odd that it's like 50 women. Mm. Because, and also events, a lot of the audiences that go to feminist talks, like people like Laura Bates do lots of amazing keynotes around sexism. Mm-hmm. How come the whole audience is women? Like, we need men to know about sexism too.
Yeah. I mean, I think with Laura Bates and with the sexism issue, the feeling, the reason that men mightn't go is because they would feel like they're under attack, whereas an open discussion about feminism and about what that means now and how we move that conversation forward then should 100% be open to
and inclusive of men. But that was the whole point, wasn't that? Emma Watson, the campaign that she fronted was called He for She, and it was all about the fact that, you know, men need to be involved in this conversation because, first of all, like, their opinions and their thoughts are valid and we want to hear them, but also it affects them too because... Mm-hmm. Equality for women also means equality for men in a way, and, you know, allowing men to also feel that they can express their traditionally feminine side,
yeah,
and be emotional and all the rest of it is going to really help them too. And so it needs to be a conversation that includes everyone, and otherwise, again, it's that whole thing of speaking to your bubble. I mean, it's a massive bubble because it's just over half the population,
yeah, yeah,
but it's still, you know, you're not going to change anything and change attitudes if the people who are still largely in power, which today still is men, are not involved in that conversation. Yeah. And especially if we make them feel excluded, I think that's going to be so counterproductive to the aim.
Yeah, it just really opened my eyes, and obviously this is totally anecdotal, but it's just having a few men that I know around me who are very liberal, very open-minded, very supportive and very feminist, for them to be like, oh, I just kind of feel like I can't enter the conversation.
Are they nervous of being shut down?
Yeah, nervous of being shut down, nervous that they're like, that they haven't got anything really to say. And I it's a complicated one because obviously they kind of, the patriarchy still exists.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying like, let's just get men on a panel to talk about themselves all the time. We don't want that. That's like what we're, you know, trying to do less of. But it's just, I would hate for men not to feel like they're part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe I'm saying that a lot of my work is around women, to women, for women, by women.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like actually I've opened my eyes to the fact that I don't want to exclude anyone.
I think also with something I've noticed a bit, which I felt a bit uncomfortable with, is this whole word of mansplaining.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand its context, like when it's used properly, I get it. But I also think that it's used as an excuse to shut men down sometimes, and again, keep them out of the conversation. And sometimes, you know, if someone is saying a point and you don't agree with them, like, explain why you don't agree with them or argue with them. But just to say, like, I don't need your mansplaining, almost like saying you're not female, so you can't be part of this conversation.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I understand sometimes it's right to say that, because sometimes, you know, a guy can wade in not having the perspective of being a woman, not having spent their lives being a woman. They'll never understand, you know, how that feels.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
But I also think, like, don't shut down someone's opinion and make them feel small. And if you overuse that as well, you're basically saying to guys, because you're not a woman, you can't be part of the conversation at all. And some of these guys might have valid points. Like, they might have a, you know, a very good perspective on things. They might be super intelligent or, you know, empathetic. And I feel like by using mansplaining all the time, you're basically telling guys, like your boyfriend, Emma, for example, like, don't even have an opinion because you're going to get shut down. And actually... Yeah. Why not just, like, engage in that even if that you think they're completely wrong, like, explain to them the female experience and explain to them why you don't agree with them
and bring them to events with you. Yeah. Like, because I always bring my friends, like, to these sorts of things. And actually I actually did bring my boyfriend to a Laura Bates talk once, and he was like, wow, that's really, like, that was really interesting, and I'm really glad I went. And I was like,
because he probably didn't actually understand,
he didn't know some of the statistics,
and
neither did I, but it was just like, it's good for everyone to be aware of these things. But it is interesting about the mansplaining thing, because I've had situations where, like, I'd be talking about women in the workplace and, like, the pay gap and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I've had a man literally be like, no, that's not true. And, like, really being like, actually, here's some statistics about women in the workplace.
No love.
And I literally, I can't explain the anger, like, that boils up.
Mm.
I literally go bright red and just have to, like, leave, because it's like, that is mansplaining.
Yeah.
And like, there's a book that Rebecca Solnit has wrote. It's a very famous feminist book called Men Explain Things to Me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really powerful. And it's like, that it's an amazing word when it's used in the right context. But I totally agree that to just shut men down means that they're just going to feel really
isolated. They feel not entitled to have an opinion, and actually, as a result, they don't associate with the term feminist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing is that, like, those talks that you go to or a podcast that you listen to, you absorb, you learn, you hear different points of view and different perspectives, and you then share that with other people that you know. So if a guy, your boyfriend, goes to Laura Bates' talk, he's sitting in the pub with his mates going, did you know? And so that's kind of the only way that actually they get the perspective from a female point of view, because a lot of the time, and it's, you know, slightly innocent, perhaps a bit naive, that men think that feminism is not a thing, lads. I mean, we're over that now. You have all of the same opportunities. Women can do whatever they want. And in theory, you know, that's true. Yeah. In reality, it's quite different. You know?
I think a lot of people think that. It's really scary to think how many people, because actually we're in a bubble, in a very privileged, also media bubble, where we read links, we share things, we read things on Twitter, we're like on the bus, like reading loads of stuff. A lot of people aren't accessing those things. And also, actually a friend of mine recently got messaged me on Facebook. He's like a late 20s film director. And he was just like, hey Emma, what are your 5 top feminist books? Just wanting to, you know, broaden my horizons a bit. Where should I start? So I was like, Sarah Pascoe, Animals, Catlin Round, House for Women, like Maya Angelou, Shonda Rhimes, and I was like, God, that's rare. Yeah. I've never had like a straight white man be like, what's on my reading list, like, to do with feminism. I was like, it's great.
That's amazing. And I feel like I've met a lot of guys, and I know a lot of guys, and maybe I'm really lucky, who are like staunch feminists, and I think like they would be so brilliant to add to that conversation and could add so much. And you're so right, like, we need to be a bit more,
which is why we're gonna have men on the podcast.
Yes,
men on the podcast. But also, you know, you guys have read Lean In. So I remember thinking about that at the time, and this whole idea of, and Sheryl Sandberg talks all about it, and she's like, you know, in order for a woman to do 50%, so obviously whether it's kids or housework or all of those things, that still predominantly falls, you know, pretty much to the woman a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And so, like, as young women, I think you absolutely want it to feel like there's a 50-50% break. I mean, I'm a little too literal in the old 50-50 mark. But like,
you like timing
things. Yeah, like, dude, I did half the math. That's your half. But you know, I'm like, I take it quite seriously, because actually I think it can slip really quickly. And Roy, my husband's amazing at that, actually. But I see so many of my friends that just take for granted that that's what they do. Mm. That's what they have to do. And that's what they have always done. But on the flip side of that, and Sheryl Sandberg hit on it in her book, in order for women to be, you know, freed up, in inverted commas, to do those things, to take on those bigger jobs, to do the things that usually are sacrificed when childcare or children come into the mix, that men need to also be allowed by society to lessen their kind of responsibilities slightly as well. And that actually a lot of women who deem themselves to be feminist would kind of slightly recoil at the idea that their husband or their partner might be a stay at home. So they want, you know, to have all of the opportunities, but they also want like a solid man, like their dad.
But isn't that the whole point of feminism, which is so misunderstood, is that actually it's not about like just lifting women up, and it's certainly not about, which some people think, which is that women should be able to have more than men, or like women are better, or that they want to like defeat men.
Yeah.
It's about equality. And again, that works both ways, because by trying to make things equal, you're also opening up huge opportunities for men who maybe feel that they aren't allowed to do those things now. And so that's, again, going exactly back to what you said, which is why feminism and discussions around it not only should involve men, because
it affects them too.
So yeah. that's even,
and that, like, while women are now given permission to, you know, to work and to pursue careers that maybe would have been frowned upon beforehand, men should also be given permission to, if they wish, stay at home, mm-hmm. or, you know, be absolutely. Flexi time or whatever it is. Yeah. And, you know, not obviously not all revolving around children, but like that actually they're allowed to do things that are traditionally not what the lad does.
Yeah.
You know, and sure. I think it's really important that it's inclusive conversation and not doors shut. Shut your mouth. We'll talk to you when we've sorted this out.
Yes. Well, so true. Yeah. Speaking of doing speaking loads of stuff work, and managing our lives.
Yeah. So this is a topic that is, well, it's quite a personal one as well, but I think it affects so many people. I think, in fact, like, I think there was a study last Christmas that said, it was across the EU, that said that more than a quarter of the people they asked, which was over 55 million people, said that they felt that they suffered from burnout. So whether that's like lack of sleep or stress or being overworked. And I feel like as I'm getting older, more and more of my friends are like showing different symptoms or like different effects of burnout. And I feel like we all don't look out for it enough or not aware of it enough, like in the workplace, but also like looking out for each other. Mm-hmm. And my particular like brand of burnout, I suppose, was that I was doing like trying to do too many jobs at the same time and like overloading myself and kind of feeling guilty to say no to anything, especially because a lot of the stuff I was doing was like for other people in a way, like, or, you know, I just felt like obligated to try and fulfill all these different promises I'd made to people. And I ended up getting an autoimmune condition and getting quite sick. So that was kind of my, and I thought like, oh, what I've gone through is quite unique. And then the more I spoke to people about it, like, honestly, almost everyone I spoke to was like, oh yeah, I got really sick from this, or oh yeah, I had a nervous breakdown, or yeah, I got depression. And I was just like, gosh, this is literally like, here I was thinking I'm so like unique, this has happened to me, look at me. And actually I was like, this is happening to everyone and people don't talk about it enough. Mm. And we've spoken quite a bit about it, haven't we?
Because I wondered with your situation, like did you have any symptoms coming, like did you see it coming or did it kind of hit you like a ton of bricks?
No, so I literally, like, I'm like quite like a high octane person, like I work on quite a high frequency and I love it, like I love, like, even just in daily life, like I'll be cooking dinner and I'll be checking my WhatsApp and I'll be listening to the radio and I'll be having a conversation and I'll be doing my mascara at the same time. Like, it's almost a joke amongst my friends, like they say that I'm driving whilst doing my tax. That's like what they say.
We don't do that at home, kids.
Do not copy this. No. But yeah, so I think like that whole like just your brain being on go is there. But I enjoyed it. Like I got a buzz from that and I liked it. So I didn't see it as a problem. And it was only literally when I got like physical symptoms, like I would wake up every morning covered in hives, like literally from head to toe, as if I'd been like sleeping in a bed of nettles every morning for 6 months.
All over
and then,
your body?
Yeah, all over my body. And it would fade by the afternoon, and then a couple of days I would wake up and my entire face was literally like the biggest, most swollen face, as if I'd had a peanut allergy. It was just huge, which can be quite dangerous, obviously, if your throat closes. So I had to take it seriously, and I got signed off work for a month. And, you know, it wasn't that serious, to be honest, like, in terms of, like, on the scale of what people can get. And, you know, thankfully for me, it wasn't a mental health thing, which I think can be the heart. Yeah, that can be, like, a whole other, you know, other story. So for me, it's like, well, it's a physical thing, and I got over it, and it's, you know, fine, you know, I got through the other. But it just opened my eyes to how many people are suffering. And I do think, like, in particular with mental health, that's not such an easy thing to solve. Like, I could solve it by just taking medication and resting
dial
for
everything
a while
down.
I haven't had any symptoms for 6 months, I'm totally fine. But I really like worry about people who, you know, are going through burnout and being pushed to the limits, you know, the worst of which is obviously risk of suicide. There's been so many cases, like, especially, you know, I think there was that guy from Goldman Sachs who like worked for like 3 days solid. There's a doctor who died. He worked 3 days in a row without a break and he literally died. Like, I think, I don't know whether this is heart or, but it was a physical thing. Like, people are being overworked to death. People are being pushed to the point where they're so overworked that they are committing suicide. Like, that's the sort of most serious end of the spectrum.
Well, but it's a massive epidemic in Japan.
Oh, really?
That same thing where, I saw it recently and it was like people on the tube literally, or on their equivalent of tube, and working all the hours. So going home on the tube, like sleeping on the tube before they literally have to get back in to work the following day, and huge, huge increase in suicide in, it's just...
Well, this is partly also because we don't have a switch off time, because we're on our phones, because our emails are on our phones, because, you know, people expect instant answers now because of WhatsApp and things like that. You don't have that, you know, 6 o'clock I go home, you know, I turn off my computer, put down my phone. You are constantly on. And I think, like, you know, especially like in a case of someone like a doctor, obviously, like, you're doing such serious work, and to be pushed to the point whereby you're just having to work days and days without breaks is so dangerous, not just for the patients, also for the doctors. Yeah. But what can we do about it? I suppose
I think, you know, Emma, you mentioned our bubble, and so a lot of people work freelance and they take on everything, and I've always worked for myself. I mean, within a career I had a million jobs beforehand where I worked for other people, and in a way it's kind of like you can shut the door and go home on that. But this kind of freelance world, which more and more people are now involved in, you kind of feel like you can never say no. And at the beginning of your career, you're like, yes, 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 yes. And if you say no, it'll never come back. And there's that kind of inbuilt fear where turning down work, whether because you don't want to do it or you physically can't do it, your reflex is to say yes. And so say yes, serve the client, and sort yourself out later. Figure out how you do it after.
It's interesting what you said about growing older, because you started by saying, you know, as I'm getting older, and I feel like that's really important as well. Not that you're old, but I think that when you're younger, like I used to do so much. I used to go to work with a hangover, and I used to do it all and do loads of stuff, and I feel like physically and mentally I could do it all. And I've noticed with myself, like the older I'm getting, and obviously the more you work, the more you kind of achieve, and like you go up the ladder slowly. But I feel like I've learnt the boundaries word recently. I never had a label for it, but what that means is boundaries. Like, no, I'm not on emails today, or I'm going on holiday, or tonight I'm not working.
If you don't go on emails, don't you find people are like, hello, what's going on? Did you get my email? Because people expect that instant answer. And they're like, did you get my email? Hello?
Well, I
kind of... And that's more stressful in a way.
Yeah. You're like, I've learnt to like shut that down, really, because I think... The pro of working for yourself is that you're always on and your phone's there, and I could be on a beach and you would never know because I'd just be doing my emails. I could even schedule an email for 6 a.m. and they'd be like, Emma's
early.
Can you
schedule emails?
Yeah, on Gmail. It's amazing. Sure. So I think there's life hack. One side of it is like, yeah, life hacks, and also like I don't go to an office. Like, oh, the freedom. The other side of that is obviously the whole work-life merge.
The other side of that is that you're sitting on a beach, but you're on your emails.
But then I'm like, I'd rather be doing that than... staring at a brick wall. But
someone else might go, right, I'm leaving work, I'm taking my 2 weeks holiday, I am turning off and doing nothing and letting my brain have a rest.
Exactly. And also, because you work in a creative industry, you come back having had those 2 weeks, seeing things differently and being like fed creatively, because when you're in that fuzz of just reacting to things that are coming in, I think you just don't feel very inspired to do anything.
Which is why last week I went on a holiday for a week and I literally did not do one bit of work, and not that that's
object to that, because you responded to messages to me and our producer Shola. We lured you back in.
Yeah,
on what was that?
One or two. Can I? Because I was by the pool, and like I think the girls had gone to Aldi to get some more prosecco, and I was just by the pool, and I was like, this isn't work. This is WhatsApp with Shola and Liana. Like, go, I didn't think of it as work, and so that's my only kind of negative, or like my vice is like doing things that feels fun. But I think to be honest, it's just like having boundaries that are personal to you. Like my personal boundaries are like, I actually like dipping into my emails.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you have to be really aware of warning signals to do with burnout. If I get any symptoms of slight, you're going down the burnout route, I know to like nip it in the bud.
And that's the thing. What I suppose those signals are different for everybody. Mm. I listened to somebody recently talk about burnout, and she said when she's overworked, when she starts being kind of ratty and a bit mean to people that she's working with, she knows I need to get out of here, because it's it's quite easy to feel like when you're really under pressure, everything is too much. Things that usually like you take in your stride all feel like just a bit.
And also
fun.
I feel like you have to train other people to not take the piss. Mm-hmm. So like I remember the same problem occurred recently that I had when I was an intern, when I used to reply to my boss's emails at midnight, because I'd be like, I'm always on, look at me, I'm up at night replying to you, doing your work, booking these things. And I just started to email back in the mornings. So I just slowly started to not be at her beck and call, and I've now really sort of made sure that I do that now in my sort of more like grown-up job, like, I'm not at people's beck and call.
I was gonna say, so I think, like, in terms of, we all work freelance, and I think what we've said is really, really important, like knowing boundaries, knowing when to switch off, like being quite self-disciplined, mm-hmm. and also, as you were saying, Angela, like being able to say no to stuff, not like yes to everything. But for people who work, you know, in an office,
in the real world,
or a factory or whatever else, I think it's really important for employers to start to understand that burnout and stress and overworking people doesn't just affect them, it affects their business. There's a really good quote I like from the CEO of a company called Reich. He's called Andrew Philip, and he says, "You wouldn't overload a piece of machinery and expect it to last long without failure. The same principles apply to humans." And actually, if you look at the cost of the industry, I think, like, something like in the UK alone, here we go, I've got the facts here. In the UK alone, in 1 year, 11.7 million days were lost to stress, depression, or anxiety. That was between 2015 and 16.
11.7 million.
Mm-hmm. And it cost the UK £6 billion. So if you think, like, as an employer, like, it would be so to their benefit to start introducing things which could help not only monitor people's, like, stress and burnout, but also, you know, things like introducing duvet days. There was also a really cool study where they found that if you gave people the option to nap at work, if you created like a napping room, they'd have like a 20-minute nap, but they were much more productive after that.
Afterwards.
So again, like, employers, create nap rooms. No, but just little things like that, like allowing people to feel that they can take time off when they need it, like not pushing people beyond their limits, because you're going to ruin your own productivity and your own profits.
And
anyway.
I think ultimately businesses, you know, obviously there are some employers who really care about the welfare of their individual staff, but a lot of the time it does come down to the bottom line. And if they can see that actually their bottom line will be helped rather than hindered by, you know, allowing employees to have a bit more balance, then that's good for everybody.
Also, I really want this, like, flexibility thing to be, like, not a stigma of... I don't want this flexibility kind of campaign to just think like it's millennials on a beach with their laptops. Like, I would hate for that to be the stereotype, because actually flexibility, I feel like, shouldn't be a perk. It should be like a right in the workplace, because if you think about it, like, yeah, you might have kids, but also you might have a sick parent, you might have to care for someone. Like, I just feel like whatever your situation, everyone should be entitled to being a human, having free time.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And not being burnt out.
But again, we have the luxury of maybe looking for that. How does a teacher organise flexible time?
There's lots of stuff around, like, job sharing pairing up with people and just making sure that the workload is covered in ways. But, I mean, it's a massive, complex
issue. I actually think it's something that, you know, should go up to government level. I think it's got to that serious a level now in our country, well, not just in our country, you know, across the board. But I do think it needs, the government needs to look at introducing things which encourages, you know, there are some jobs you can't, like, You know, you're going to have to do a shift. I suppose if you're, like, a surgeon, you know, you're going to have to always work. And, you know, NHS cuts are less. You're going to have to always work, like, way more hours than you should, and be way more underpaid if you're a nurse, for example, than you should. But I think, like, introducing new measures, or at least looking at it, at least if we start to, like, research and understand it and seeing what things can work. Like, this NAP study, okay, it made me seem a bit silly, but it actually really worked. And I do think, like, something else which is, like, becoming, like, very trendy now, but I do think it works, is just the whole idea of mindfulness. So about, like, whatever you're doing at that moment, and that doesn't just mean meditating, but, like, if you're cooking, like, be cooking
in that,
like,
moment.
Be, like, focusing on the smells. And, you know, if you're, even if, like, you're walking, like, feel the ground under your feet. Like, don't be, like, texting
this from the
phone.
Girl who does taxes while she's driving.
But this is the thing. It's been a massive struggle for me to do it. I have an app called Headspace that I use, and I love it now, but I found it really hard at the beginning. But I think, like, you can just, you don't have to just do like that, you know, 15 minutes in the morning meditation or whatever. It's the mindfulness throughout the day. I'm so prone to like slipping out of that, and I have to make it really conscious.
Same.
But I think it, you know, it has been shown in like proper studies to really help, like, bring your cortisol levels down, bring your adrenaline levels down, and that has a physical effect on your body, and a physical, like an actual effect on your brain. So, you know, it's not just like mumbo jumbo.
It's not
like
just airy fairy. Yeah.
This is like, you know, scientifically proven, like reducing like stress cortisol levels. Exactly, and it's making us like much healthier. So
I think it's so good that you talk about it, because I remember when I interviewed you last year at the Cheltenham Festival, I think the way that you articulated it as well, about how you in a way were lucky it was physical, because if it was just mental, you could have gone even further in a way. Like, having physical symptoms allowed you to be like, this is actually happening.
Well, definitely. And also allows you to go to an employer, look at this, I need to get it sorted out. Whereas,
and it raised that stigma of mental health, because if it was just mental and you didn't have physical symptoms, it actually was still just as important.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't want to talk about it too much, just only because, like, I'm not for privacy reasons at all, but more just because, like, I don't want people to think like I'm going, oh, poor me, isn't it awful? Because I do think on the spectrum of what people go through, like, it was definitely on like the least serious side of things, even though it looked quite shocking. But it was, you know, really, like, it didn't really affect me mentally. It didn't really, you know, it's not anything that
didn't have a lasting
effect. And that was, you know, what I was saying then was like, yeah, you know, if it had been mental health, I probably would have pushed myself way beyond the point when I went, I need to stop now. Because no one else can see it. You can't see it yourself even. You sort of convince yourself that you need to just push through. Or even if it had been something physical but internal, you know. And that's what I worry about, people like, who are in far more stressful situations than I was, who, you know, literally have heart attacks, for example, or respiratory failure. And, you know, I just think we all have to be like really aware of ourselves and like watch ourselves, and also for each other.
There's so much positive talk around mental health. And by positive talk, I mean we're talking about it openly. But still, I think there's a kind of time limit. Like, if you had those hives for 9 months, people would say, she's still got those hives for 9 months. There must be something wrong. She needs to get them sorted. I think an employer or even friends and family, no matter how brilliant they are, will go, okay, you've had 9 months. When is this? When is this?
And you know what else there is? I think people don't give themselves, like, let themselves off the hook to even go to the doctor. Like, it took me months to even go to a doctor because I was like, oh, I'm fine. Haven't got time. Whatever. It's going to be fine. And I think people do that all the time. I was listening to the radio the other day and someone was saying that they hurt their back at work and they wanted to go and get their back fixed, and they were told like they needed to take that as like time off. And I just think like that kind of pressure on people to not be allowed to look after themselves and not just say like, if you're unwell, like, go and speak to someone, like, you're not a whinger, you're not, you know, soft, whatever, you're actually just being sensible, and go like early, go like before things have gone too far. You know, whether that is physical or mental,
which in a way, like, when you go back to the bottom line, somebody sorting out a twinge in their back for a couple of hours in the morning versus being signed off for 2 weeks with a slip disc.
You know what I mean?
It's like, okay, actually, if you nip things in the bud and you're aware and you're mindful and you're not ashamed to go in and say, I just want to sort this out. I know it sounds a little trivial almost, but it's the beginning.
Well, and how short-sighted of the employer? Because again, like, if someone's then signed off work with a horrific back issues for months, you're going to have to pay them sick leave. Yeah. Like, get, like, say to them, yeah, anytime you need to go and like sort yourself out. People, you know, maybe some people will take advantage of that, but the majority of people won't. And overall, I think you'll be definitely way better off.
And I think if you've got a decent boss, you don't take advantage. If you've got a dick who will never give you 2 hours off for, you know, a medical reason or a personal reason or anything else, then you kind of go, you know what, actually, I'm sick of that. I'm going to take 2 weeks off.
It's so obvious, isn't it? Like, but that no one does it. Like, happy employees means happy people, which means harder working people. Like, if you like someone, you want to do them proud.
I'm such a fan of duvet days, like having just like, you know, a couple of days a year when you're allowed to just on the morning ring up and be like, I need it, you know, even if it's just because you're hungover, whatever, just be like, if, obviously, again, some jobs you can't because, you know, it's an emergency situation, but in most jobs you can. And I think it's such a nice thing to people, and then they won't call in sick either. They'll just take their duvet days.
But wasn't there a thing recently where a girl, a woman, so she emailed her boss saying she wouldn't make it in. She was having a mental health day.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And so I don't know whether it was technically a duvet day, but it was, I think she called it a mental health day. And the the boss responded back, CCing in all of the employees, which, okay, I mean, she had to be okay with that, but saying, this is brilliant, this is a real example of what we should be doing. You know, I'm typing as I talk. Yeah, that you, well done for looking after your mental health. We should all take this as an example of how we should look after ourselves. Brilliant. And I thought, what?
I really love that. And I love, like, the when there's a meatier conversation around, like, the self-care thing, mm-hmm. because I feel like some, like, magazines, I don't know, like, glossy outlets kind of put this self-care thing as, like, buying yourself a Jo Malone candle and, yeah. like, having a bath. And I'm like, God, it's so much more than... that mm-hmm. it's so much more than materialistic things mm-hmm. like self-care is actually like really hard if you are conditioned to put other people before you mm-hmm. which especially women are
yeah you have to force yourself to do it
to be like mm-hmm. it seems so selfish doesn't it to look yeah. after yourself but you have to
but if you look after yourself you're going to be in a much better position to look after other people mm-hmm. so you're actually doing it for other people too yeah.
as Barney would say what does he say what's the thing he ends on? I'm just thinking of our Americanism.
Oh no, wait, I've got one. It's like RuPaul says.
Go on.
If you can't love yourself, how the hell are you gonna love anybody
else? Yeah.
Amen. Yeah. I mean, on that note, thank you so much, Angela.
Thank you.
It's
lovely.
Very odd podcast.
Love an odd podcast. Also love our colour coordinating.
Thank you so much, Angela.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Angela for yet another insightful episode. Hope you guys enjoyed that too. And in fact, that is the last episode for season one of Get It Off Your Breasts. I can't believe how quickly that time's gone. But thank you so much for joining us on what has been such an incredible journey. Thank you also to our fantastic guests. We've had so many wonderful people joining us from so many different walks of life. We're really looking forward to bringing you more exciting and varied and interesting guests in season two. And we also want to say a huge thank you to our incredible producer, Shola, without whom we could not have created this podcast. But most of all, of course, thanks to you for listening, for subscribing, for joining us each and every week, for rating and reviewing us. You've been absolutely fantastic. And in fact, what we thought we'd do for season two is invite you to get stuff off your breasts too, because so many of you have commented and messaged us saying that you really want to share some of your thoughts too, and we've shared a lot of our thoughts and our guest thoughts, and it's your turn.
So if you want to get something off your breast, because we can tell that some episodes are getting people riled up in good and bad ways, and we just want to hear all of your thoughts, because this is what this podcast has been about for us, is being really unfiltered and getting conversations out there. So if you want to join the conversation for season two, please can you send us a voice memo using WhatsApp or using anything on your phone. So email us getitoffyourbreasts@gmail.com, and we want to play some of your Get It Off Your Breast moments in season two.
It could be stuff we've discussed. It can be stuff we haven't even thought of and you just happened to come up with that day and you really want to have a place to share it with other people. Try and make it, if you can, up to 30 seconds, probably no longer than that. And we cannot wait to hear what you guys have to get off your breasts too.
We'll see you when season two kicks off, and thank you again for all your support. We've absolutely loved making it.
See you in the new year.